So we've been doing these programs around the state in terms of the master cattleman and master wool grower, and we have a institute now too. It's a three-day intensive institute. It looks at business management, and several of our attendees had suggested that, you know, maybe something on the hay side would be really good to help hay producers. And so that sort of was the evolution of this master hay grower program. We intend on hopefully this is the first of a few that we take around the state, and hopefully it'll be a successful program. So today I'm going to start us out, and I'm going to talk about some economic tools to look at decisions on an operation and things you might consider when you're in hay production. Then we'll have Caleb Carter come and talk about irrigating alfalfa. Then Scott Schell will talk about insect pest management. Then we'll get establishment and fertilization from Hudson. Then we'll take a lunch on our own and be back and finish up with variety selection from Anwar Islam, hay marketing from Don Randall, and risk management from John Hewlett. So we got a lot to cover today, so we'll get started and get through this. So my name is Bridger Fates. I'm the livestock marketing specialist for UW. My office is actually over in Evanston, so on the opposite side of the state, but it's good to be here. And I'm going to talk about these economic tools. So I'll touch on a little bit about why we do some of this economic analysis. Then I'll show you the ranch tools that we use for some of this analysis, and then I'll look at a couple of specific tools, partial budgeting and net present value, and with some specific examples. So the example we're going to look at with the partial budget is, you know, it's been something that's happened these last few years with where we've been in drought situations where producers are faced with, if you've got cattle and hay, you know, do you want to buy hay if you're going to run short or sell cows? And so we'll look at that decision. And then on the net present value analysis, we'll look at, you know, the economics of investing in a center pivot, with some specific examples from Western Wyoming to give you an idea of how you might apply that tool on your operation. So, you know, ranching, a lot of times, even, you know, whether it's farming or ranching, producers really like the hands-on aspect of the business, and what, like working cattle, or like you know, driving a tractor and making a straight windrow, or making a nice plow row. You know, that's a lot of times what we like to do as producers, and we don't necessarily like to concentrate on the business side too much. You know, that's not necessarily what we got into the business for a lot of times, but it is important to look at the decisions you're making on your operation from a business perspective too. You know, it is just good business. It might lead to increased profitability. These bottom three are probably even more important. The one that's really important is this, the idea of reducing pitfalls. You know, in agriculture, margins are fairly slim, we know. Unless you've been in the cattle business the last few years, margins been pretty good. But in general, margins are fairly slim in agriculture. And so, you know, we can go along and do things and do things well, and, you know, be gaining some momentum, be getting some equity in our operation. And if we make one big mistake or one small mistake, pitfalls in agriculture can really get to us and cause us to lose, you know, quite a bit of money that year, and then it takes several years again to build back that equity in the operation. And so, you know, avoiding some of those pitfalls is important. This one's kind of talking about, you know, a lot of times the changes we need to make, you know, maybe we want to put a center pivot on to get some better production. It requires the assistance of a banker a lot of times. And so, you know, some of these tools to be able to convince the banker is handy. And then this one, I always say agriculturists have a really healthy dose of skepticism, and which is a good thing, but it's also, you know, you can't be so skeptical that you're not willing to look at these and analyze new opportunities on your operation. The other thing that we found, or that data would suggest, and that's that this equation's not always necessarily accurate. That sort of the low-cost farmer or rancher equals the high-profit farmer or rancher. Now, in general, that's true. You know, that farmer or rancher that really concentrates on their budget and focuses on those issues is, in general, a profitable operation. But there's data that would suggest, at least in the beef industry, that there's a few things that people invest in that generate more profit than those other producers that aren't making investments. And those are, you know, things like genetics and range and pasture improvement. But I think, in general, if we think about it, investments are what drive, are potentially what can drive profit in farming and ranching operations. And those input costs, you know, buying, let's see, who's doing the fertilizer talk? Hudson. I'll pick on fertilizer here a little bit. But buying more fertilizer or buying, you know, more herbicide, that can certainly help your operation, but those benefits are not always additive. And so, but looking at things that you can invest in your operation, that's kind of what I like to talk about to producers, because I think that's where you can really make some significant changes in your operation. So how do you deal with change? Well, there's whole farm budgets or enterprise budgets, and there's certainly crop budgets out there that talk about hay production and give you an idea of how much it's costing you to produce hay, and you can go into those budgets and enter some of your own numbers. But they're not necessarily set up to help you deal with change if you want to make a change on your operation. So, you know, the example is, you know, once you get that crop budget set up, can you just go in there and say, you know, I think my yields, or what would this budget look like if I could get my yields up 20%? So if you adjust your yields up 20%, you know, and then look at the bottom number, that revenue isn't exactly what you're going to get, right? So you had to give up some stuff to get that 20% increase in yield. And so you really need to look at that stuff you had to have to give up, what it costs you to get that increase in yield. And so the way that we do that is through this partial budget method, because it forces you to ask yourself all those questions in terms of what are you giving up, what are you getting in return for making these changes. And, you know, you don't always have to use the partial budget in terms of making those decisions. Sometimes you might want to use an enterprise budget, but the thought process of the partial budget that I'm going to talk about is really important, even when you're making changes in those enterprise budgets. So I developed some tools for Wyoming producers to utilize to make some of these decisions. We're going to talk about the partial budgeting tool and the net present value tool today, and with these specific examples. There are several other tools on here, an AUM value tool, genetic investment, stocking rate, sprayer calibration, and they all have fact sheets associated with them. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time, but that's available too. So our goal with this analysis is to determine whether we're going to be better or worse off. So I'm not helping you necessarily determine if your ranch is overall profitable or if the hay operation is overall profitable. What I'm helping you is, if you make a change, are you going to be better? Are you going to be making more money or less money than you were before? Profitability, to get to that, you still have to go into a whole farm or whole ranch budget to understand. But for the most part, what I've found producers want to know is, am I going to be better off by making this decision or worse off? So this partial budget, you know, it's really useful in sort of intermediate term analysis. You know, do I want to fertilize this year? Do I want to switch from round bales to square bales? Do I want to, is it time to reestablish the crop? Some of those decisions are really set up nicely to, or this partial budget is set up nice to deal with those types of decisions. So there's nothing really magical about the partial budget other than it forces you to ask you these four questions and respond to each four of them individually, and it really, so you can really make the decision correctly. So it asks, what new or additional costs will be incurred based on this change? What current income will be lost or reduced? What new or additional income will be received? And what current costs will be reduced or eliminated? So it's really important to ask yourself all four of these questions as you go through. And the thing that it really helps on, you know, I don't know if you, how much practice you have budgeting or what you do, but I know myself, when I budget, I tend to net things out in my head. I tend to think about what I'm going to gain, some of the losses, and I just start netting them out in my head, and you know, then I write down the bottom line answer. Well, if you ask, if you answer all four of these questions individually, it forces you not to net things out in your head, because usually when you're netting things out in your head, you're missing important data, and you're usually not getting the answer as correct as you should be. So this is what a partial budget looks like on paper or online using that tool, where you list the additional cost from a proposed change here. You add in the additional income, do the reduced income, and you do the reduced cost. So you have to consider all four of those as we go through. So I said we're going to look at a specific example. The example I wanted to look at today is considering, you know, right now we have 300 cows, or the situation where you have 300 cows, but you're finding yourself due to a drought, with only having enough hay for 140 of those cows. So this was, you know, I went through this example the year before during the drought. I had some specific producers come and talk to me, and we worked through these numbers, and so, you know, it's from a real situation. So the proposed change is, you know, basically, currently we would have to sell 160 cows if we didn't buy hay, right? So our proposed change is to buy hay for those remaining 160 cows. We're going to analyze the impact of the shortage in a single year, but analyze it over a four-year time frame. So what I'm saying is, this example assumes that it's a one-year drought, that it's a one-year hit, and so we're analyzing it over, you know, whether we can survive that 1 year and then get back into business and into the normal thing. But we do it over a four-year time frame because that in this example, and I think that's still true today, it's going to probably, if you sell 160 cows, it's probably to your benefit to wait 3 or 4 years before you try and buy back into the business with cow prices the way they are. So this is the audience participation part. What new or additional costs will be incurred by buying this hay? Anybody? Chance, you've been practicing partial budgets. I saw it yesterday. So. What costs are we gonna? Are we gonna have by buying hay? Right. Other than hay, buying hay is one. Yes. Freight. Manpower. What's that? Manpower. So, what about on the cow side? I mean,
you're talking about 300 cow herd that you buy hay to feed them, right?
Right, but so. Remember, the choice that we're making is we either sell those 160 cows or we keep the 160 cows and buy hay.
I guess you'd have to look and see whether you make money on selling the cows and then what the tax implications are.
Yeah. So that will show up in this budget, but on this one, you're having to pay to maintain those 160. I mean, you have to, that cow maintenance cost is what I'm was trying to get at in terms of the 160 cows.
Don't you have that cost whether you're raising the hay or whether you're buying it per cow? You still got the same maintenance cost average.
You have 140, 160 less cows if you don't decide to buy hay.
Yeah, I understand that.
So there's 160 cows that you got to pay maintenance cost on if you keep them. Okay? So that's what, I mean, this is the, this discussion is good because that's the type of things we miss when we try and just net things out in our head, right? We think of, well, we're sending cows, you know, so you have to answer these questions. And then there will be some miscellaneous costs like freight and labor is a good one to bring up. In a partial budget, labor is treated a little differently. So you only put in the costs that you actually incur in a partial budget. So what I mean by that is if you have to hire somebody to come help you do this, or you have to work less at an off-farm income, and so it's actually costing you actual labor costs, and you would put it in here. If it means that there's three of you working on your operation and three of you are going to work harder because you make this change, then you don't put labor cost in here. That's just, you're fully employed. You know, we're only accounting for actual cost to change in a partial budget.
Yeah, I have a question, Roger. I've spent 20 years trying to convince producers that their labor is worth something.
Yep.
That they need to take it into account.
Yep.
So if you go from a 7-hour feeding cycle to a 10-hour feeding cycle, it's not just full employee, you've added actual labor. And then that opportunity cost to be doing something else is there too.
Right. So, but that's not the question a partial budget's asking. You're assuming that you're fully employed on your operation. Like I said, if you did have opportunity costs, if you were working in town, then yes, I would count labor. But if this means you're going to work harder or go on a cruise this winter, then, you know, you don't count that labor. And it's really just looking at, am I going to be better or worse off financially? And it's not meant to be a final sort of financial statement at the end. It's meant to be a decision tool to say, is this extra money that I'm going to get worth the extra time and effort I'm going to put into this, or is it not?
So why the partial part you're analyzing this enterprise, not the other enterprises you might have on place?
It's only measuring the true costs and returns from this change you make on your operation. So what current income will be lost or reduced?
Calf sales.
Yeah. Well, selling the cold pears. You could, the 160 pears that you were going to have to get rid of, you could get that income. You're not going to get that income by doing this. The other thing you're not going to get is after this year. You know, I told you we were looking at it a 4-year time period, and I have the numbers, so it'll all make a little more sense to you guys. But we could sell our excess hay the following 3 years. You know, this first year we wouldn't have hay to sell, but the next 3 years we would have hay to sell because we wouldn't have those 160 cows to run it through. And then, what new or additional income will be received by making this change? This is where the calf sales really come in. We'll have calves to sell because of keeping those cows. And then the final one, this is the one that's always the hardest for people to think of in terms of what costs will be reduced or eliminated. This is where you get like at least an A minus if you get this one right. So. Yeah. The cost you're going to reduce by buying the hay. I'll give you a hint. Remember, I told you we were going to get back into the business 4 years, the cow business 4 years later. So,
replace
buying those bred cows back into the operation. So this is what the budget looks like. And certainly this example is a framework. There would be some detailed costs that you would need to put in for your specific operation. But in general, I said the hay would be 3.25 tons times 160 head equals 520 tons extra at $200 a ton. That's $104,000. My assumption was that this is sort of a Western budget in that normally we feed about 2 ton per year per cow. And we're gonna have to increase that up a dollar, 1.25 tons to get them through the drought. Our annual cow cost, that's that maintenance on those 160 cows for three years. I had that in at $650 per cow, so that's $312,000 that we're looking at for our annual cow cost. So, and then reduced income, the culled pairs, 160 pairs, $1,400 a pair is what I had, you know, what we could sell those for. And then hay sales for the 3 years that we don't have drought, hopefully, that's $120,000. So I was at $760,000 of reduced or additional cost and reduced income. Okay. Over on this side, calves, this is the additional income from buying this hay. I'm selling a 90% calf crop for 4 years at $180 on these five 550-pound calves. That's $570,000. We don't have to buy back those cows. I was buying back 160 bred cows at $1,200. That's $192,000. So the net income or loss is a net income of $2,200 by buying hay and keeping the cows. So this is really one of those things, you know, it gets to Scott's question in terms of labor, but it also, just because this is a positive number or a negative number, doesn't mean that that's the right decision to make, right? So, you know, $2,200 might be worth it for you. I would say in this situation, that even a negative number, as long as it wasn't too negative, would be interesting to producers, because producers have a real ownership in their cattle that they've developed, you know, that they've bred over the years, and selling 160 of them and buying back an unknown 160 sometime later, you know, a lot of producers wouldn't want to make that decision. They would rather keep the cattle that they've developed and they have now, and so they'd be willing even to sustain a small loss to be able to keep their cattle so that, you know, in the next 4 years they still have their herd in place and they're back to sort of even. So just because this number is positive or negative doesn't mean that's the decision you make. It just provides you a really good framework for making those decisions on your operation. So the next thing that I like to do with these partial budgets is do a sensitivity analysis, though. And I'll go out and show you that real quick here. I just want to show you what it looks like. So I do this on my online tool automatically, but I calculate a 5% and a 10% error rate for you. So basically what I'm saying is none of us are really good at putting together budgets. So we put that partial budget together with our best guess of numbers, but we're probably going to be off. And so I calculate a grid based on if you're, this 5% error rate is, you know, well, what if I overestimated my cost by 5% and underestimated my returns by 5%? That's the best case scenario. So there, it generates about a value of sort of best case scenario, and then your worst case scenario is, well, what if I underestimated my cost by 5% and overestimated my revenue by 5%? So it gives you a grid of numbers, and that grid is really, you know, if you're working with a banker, if you spend the time to do this partial budget and show them that grid of numbers in terms of your error rate, it's a really valuable tool. We were doing this class, as part of our Master Stockman class, I think it was at the Bear River location, and we had a banker in the room with us from Western Ag Credit. And I talked about this and mentioned this, and he said, you know what, to the group, he said, if you don't do that, we do it when you come in with your numbers. And so we're going to do that anyway, so it's better that you do it and know it ahead of time, because we put those same stress tests on your numbers when you come in, and we may or may not talk to you about it. But that's the kind of thing that they do. So it's definitely worth your time to do those sorts of analysis before you go into the bank. All right. So So I know I zipped through partial budgeting pretty quick this morning, but we got a lot of information to go, and I'm certainly available. You know, if you go online to that website, my contact information's there, and I hope that I'm very responsive to any emails to help you work through any issues. Or, you know, I have producers call me all the time and say, hey, let's look at this change, and I'll get online with them, and we'll do that. So you're more than welcome to do that. So any questions, though, on the partial budget process before I move on?
You're out of Evanston?
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. Hey, Richard, if you assume that drought is more than warm and not,
yeah.
Can you run this resell all the cows and produce hay?
No, but certainly you could use this tool to do that, yep. And it might. Yep. Right. And it would change your sort of assumptions on hay prices, but it's a reasonable assumption to make. Yeah. In this example, I was just trying to help producers in terms of that 1 year decision. Is it worth the risk sort of buying hay this 1 year and trying to make it through or not? Yeah. All right. So now we're going to look at, if you make a change on your operation, and the example we're going to talk about is buying a center pivot, where you have to invest some money that's going to take some time to pay off, you know, what kind of a tool do you use? That's where that partial budget isn't quite good enough to make those sorts of decisions. And so that's where we use a net present value analysis. Because investments add risk, you know, that future income from investment is not guaranteed. We could use the same capital that we're going to make those investments in other situations. And oftentimes, you know, we need to borrow that capital. So when we talk about net present value, the way I like to describe it, which isn't necessarily 100% technically accurate, but it's very representative of what this net present value is figuring, is if I had $750 today and I was willing to pay you that right now, or I promised you $1,000 2 years from now, which would you be interested in? Anybody want the $750 now, or? I'm not all that trustworthy. I mean, $750 now would seem pretty good for me. So, you know, if I offered you $500 now or $1,000 2 years from now, or $250 now or $1,000 2 years from now, at some point there is a number that you guys are ambivalent on. So you would say that, you know, that maybe it's $566 for you today is equal to $1,000 2 years from now, you know, in terms of the risk of you getting that payment from me versus the value of that money to you today. That's really what this net present value is looking at. You're spending real dollars today to invest in, you know, a center pivot or something else, some other change you're making on your operation. And all of the returns are at risk in the future. And so they're really not as worth as much to you today as that money you're spending today. And so you have to figure out, you know, where that balance is. And this tool helps you by using an interest rate and some discount rate to figure out, you know, how much those future revenue sources are worth to you in today's dollars. And that's what all the net present value tools do. So this is what the tool looks like out on the website. There are other net present value tools that you can use, but you would enter your investment cost, you enter an interest rate, enter annual costs and annual revenues, and it calculates a 5-year net present value for you, a 10-year, a 15-year, and a break-even year. So I have had producers ask me why I only go out to 15 years. Well, in general, I would say, there's not, ag operations are the only time that I get asked that question, most businesses would never even consider going out to 15 years for a break even. You know, 5 to 7 is sort of what they would look at. But I did go out to 15 years because there are things we do in ag that will last us 15 years. So certainly a center pivot, probably, you know, 15 years is about the lifetime of a center pivot or less. And so you wouldn't necessarily want to go out 15 years for a center pivot. But, you know, if you were doing a range reseeding project or a pasture reseeding project, you could reasonably expect to get 15 years of production on that. And so 15 years might be a reasonable time frame to look at. So the example I wanted to go through is a center pivot example. And some questions you have to ask yourself when you put a center pivot in is, will you increase or decrease your irrigated acreage? How well are you currently able to cover the field with flood irrigation or side rolls? You know, will an increase in water efficiency allow you to irrigate longer? So, you know, I hear this argument a lot in terms of, you know, if you talk to the conservation districts or whatever, that we're going to save you a lot of water. Well, if water isn't a shortage for you, if you're able to cover your ground with flood irrigation, saving water is not an economic return for you. You know, it's really only a return for you if it's a shortage for you. And so I've had some producers in my part of the world that was sort of the argument that the conservation district talked to them about putting in a pivot. And then when they realized, well, we're not short of water, even in a drought year, we never run short of water. You know, it didn't make as much sense. So, pumping costs, you know, do you have access to electricity? Do you have good electric rates? Or are you on diesel power? You know, and then can you add some AUMs by grazing the irrigated aftermath? You know, those are some of the questions that I've asked producers as we've went through these examples with them and put in a center pivot on. So I have two specific examples, one out of Uinta County and one out of Lincoln County. The Uinta County example, before they put the pivot on, they were flood irrigating about 83 acres and getting about 2 tons per acre of grass hay per year. And they had about 0.5 AUMs per acre aftermath grazing on this after they hayed it. After they put the center pivot sprinkler in, they installed it on 145 acres, so they increased, you know, they got 40 extra acres that was brushed ground before by putting this center pivot on that they were able to irrigate that they weren't able to before. The fuel cost, it was a diesel motor and they were at about $6,000 per year, so a pretty hefty fuel cost on this pivot. 2004 production, they had 60 acres in oats, so the total yield was 215 tons at 1.5 tons per acre. So I'm not sure I really believe that before they were actually getting 2 tons per acre, but that's the data they gave me. But then when they tracked their real numbers, it was 1.5 tons per acre average they were getting. So 60 acres of that in oat hay and 85 acres in grass hay. And they harvested a little over 1 AUM per acre of aftermath grazing. So they bumped up another half an AUM per acre with their aftermath grazing. So the investment cost, it was $950 an acre to put the full investment cost of this pivot. Pumping costs, they were right at $50 an acre. Additional harvest costs for that extra acreage at $30 an acre when you spread it over the whole acreage. An additional fertilizer, again, spreading it over the whole acreage, $20 an acre. Additional operation and maintenance, $40 an acre. So their total annual costs were $140 an acre on this pivot. And if we look at their returns based on that 1.75 tons per acre, I put it in at $110 per ton for grass hay, sort of the last five year average on grass hay. It's a little low this year, I understand, but 0.5 AUMs per acre grazing at, I put that in at $17 an AUM, so a total return of $201 per acre. So when we put that in the model, $950 investment cost per acre, 5% interest rate, 140 annual costs, $201 annual revenue. It never breaks even in 15 years. So it doesn't. So this didn't break even in 15 years and under that situation. In fact, though, this was an NRCS project, and so it was subsidized by 50% in the investment costs. So his true investment was only $475 an acre, not the $950. But it still is going to take him 10 years to break even on that investment, even with that subsidized cost. So, I mean, what's the answer? Is it the right thing to do? It might be. He might not have been able to, you know, continue to irrigate that with the labor he had. And certainly, you know, you may see different production level differences on your operation. So I'm not saying don't put a center pivot on because this guy didn't break even. What I'm telling you is the only way that you can find out if it's right for you is to run those same sort of numbers on your operation and plug in your actual numbers and see what it gives you. And again, you know, depending on what this number is, there's no right or wrong answer necessarily in terms of the decision you make, unless, you know, if you were losing $200 an acre and on your 15-year net present value, I could say that was probably a bad decision to make. But so that's that example. I'll do one more quick example and then get the. I think we're getting pretty close to back on time for our schedule. This is a Cokeville example, Lincoln County example. This producer had 380 acres flood irrigated for a total yield of grass alfalfa hay mix of 395 ton or 1.04 ton per acre is what he was at before this project. So after, he put two pivots on, 250 acres and a 65 acre pivot, so a total of 315 acres. So he's actually irrigating 80 fewer acres. He lost 80 acres in the process of doing this because of the circular pattern instead of a square, you know. So his pumping cost, this is where he had a real advantage. The electric company there in that area, Lincoln County, is it Lower Valley Power and Light? They offer some really phenomenal ag rates. And so it really works well for these guys. So his pumping cost was only $4.28 an acre. So his average production over a couple of years was 800 ton or 2.54 ton per acre. You know, so he almost, you know, he more than doubled his production per acre. And he harvested a little over 1 AUM per acre of aftermath grazing. So when we look at the cost assumptions on this one, same initial investment costs. His pumping costs, when you spread it out over all of the acreage, is only $5 an acre. Additional harvest cost, $20 an acre. He argued, and I think very successful, that he didn't have an additional fertilizer cost. In fact, he tried to argue that it was less. And the reason was that he was able to fertilize through fertigation, and so he spent less money on fertilizer than he was before and did a better job is what he was saying. And so I think that's true. I didn't put in a negative number there. I didn't put in fertilizer savings, he would argue that. And then operation maintenance at $40 an acre. So his total annual cost was $65 an acre. His annual returns, he added the 1.1 tons per acre at $110 per ton, added some of the AUMs per grazing, so his net return was $129.50 per acre. So when we go through the model, again, at the $950, it wouldn't break even in 15 years with this pivot. If you look at it with the cost share, he broke even after 9 years. And after his 15 years, you know, he had a return of $227 per acre based on this model. So these both of these examples were fairly solid in terms of real numbers, worked with producer and got real production data. So I guess the take-home message on this is a couple of them. One, this tool is very handy for doing some some analysis in terms of investment that you might be considering on your operation. The other one, though, is even at the subsidized rate, center pivots aren't always a no-brainer decision. You really should look at your operation and consider them pretty careful. I mean, at one point, you know, it was like this fire sale on center pivots because of the subsidy. But still, in terms of that decision process, still something you need to really look at pretty hard. So I think I got us back pretty close to on time as we go through this. Any questions from anybody? I did fail to mention the one thing in terms of there are other economic tools that you can use and other economic analysis that you can do to look at investments. You know, you can do an internal rate of return or a modified internal rate of return, or there's other sort of things that you can look at to determine an investment. The reason that I have chosen these two, and that is I used to work for a company where it was my job to look at new potential investments. And when I first started doing that job, I used some of those other formulas and calculations, and I would show them to the group, and we would talk about them, and nobody bought into them because they were just numbers on a page, and nobody really knew what it was talking about, and we didn't make decisions based on that. And so sort of drifted down to these two tools, the partial budget and net present value. When I would show those to the group, everybody could sort of look at it, understand what was going on, and we could make decisions on it. And so that's why we've chosen.
In your net present value and your original numbers over here, do you take into consideration changes in taxes or land value?
So you can. I'm not in these situations. What I would suggest to producers is if that number is a positive number, you know, if that net present value is a positive number or the number on the partial budget is a positive number and you are very interested in making that change, that's when you go talk to your accountant and say, you know, how's this going to affect me based on my taxes and land values and those kind of things. You know, this tool is meant to help you in that decision process so that you have enough information to go on. You know, if it's a negative number and you look at it, or if it's a small positive number and you go, I'm not interested in that, then there's really no reason to, you know, go talk about the tax implications and other things. So, all right.